You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, this is David. Welcome back behind the velvet rope. Let's just get right into it today. We have so much to get to because we are joined by the one, the only, Miss Carol Potter.
Well, thank you, David. That's a very sweet introduction. Has anyone ever told you that you bear a resemblance to Randy Rainbow?
Not once. In my entire life.
Really? Really? I mean, there's something about your face and the shape of your face. I don't know. It might also be your attitude, which is similar to his, right?
I thought you were... Okay, so let me just tell you, this is not my ego talking, but I thought you were going somewhere else. This does tie in because numerous times at numerous ages, various people tell me throughout my life, this is going to sound egotistical, that I look like Brian Austin Green. That's really? What I get. Yeah, and that sounds very egotistical because he's just, I mean, I appreciate all that is Brian Austin Green, personally.
Yeah, that's funny because I think of his face as being wider and square, more square than yours, whereas Randy's is this nice long oval.
When we get off now, I'm going to have to go and see, like, really study because you are literally the first person who has ever
said that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it might be an online thing. You know, I only see him on video and I'm only seeing you on video. It might not be an in life thing at all. You know what I mean?
I do. And listen, if anyone knows Brian Austin Green's face, I mean, you certainly know it better than me.
Well, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time, right?
It's been a hugely long time. I mean, I'm just so bowled over by the resilience of this show and how the people who loved it at the time are such diehard fans, and we keep getting new fans because of, you know, DVD sales, and now we're on, you know, some kind of cable networks and or streaming services, right? And so new generations are discovering it. I mean, I'm just blown away by how it's endured through these many, 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 many years.
Does it ever get, and you're answering half of my questions right now, and then I want to ask you some other things and go back to the beginning, but since we're on the subject, does it ever get tiring? Like, just even as like an actress to be like, you know, listen, you've done a lot in your life. We're going to talk about your book. We're going to talk about what you do now. You know, you could play any role. You could play the breakout role of your life next week with Meryl Streep, and you could both win Academy Awards. And, you know, does that ever get tiring that you're Cindy Walsh to a whole bunch of people?
No. You know, honestly, I think one of the things that's nice about it is everybody has such a warm spot in their hearts for her. I mean, it might be different if she was a sociopath, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like I live in this world where everybody's coming up to me all the time saying, Cindy Walsh, Cindy Walsh, Cindy Walsh. Truly, that's still a rare occurrence. You know, moments like this, and, you know, occasions when I happen to be out in public and somebody recognizes me. But obviously, that hasn't happened at all this year, because I haven't been out in public.
It has not happened this year or last year.
It's not at all overwhelming, because, you know, I get, when people do connect with me, their hearts are so forward in terms of their love for this character. It's balm, really. I mean, it's lovely. It's sweet. And I have to honor it, you know?
That's good, because I never, you know, I mean, I think most people feel that way when they have a role like this, but you never know. I always, you know, it's always like a fine line, I feel, of like.
Well, I have a feeling the kids went through a period where they were so, get thee behind me, you know, Brandon Walsh or Brenda Walsh, right? I'm here right. to do other things. And partly because I did sort of move into another line of work soon after, although I did that soap too, Sunset Beach, which was, gosh, that was an awful lot of fun too. It was almost the same character, frankly.
It was a very similar character, and it was
very
a great show
character. And I don't know, it's funny, because in the year that my son was born, I did three guest stars, and they were all moms of different kinds. And when I was doing commercials in New York, there was this year where I went from, you know, I suddenly popped into the mom category. I mean, in the same year, I had a baby and a 10-year-old.
Wow.
So it obviously, there's something in my persona that communicates to people that says mom.
I think if they ever do like a top 25 or 50 moms, you know, like, okay, I would assume Florence Henderson is probably number one or in the top three. But you're going to be on that list, whatever it is. I'm telling you.
Well, it is really amazing to me. It's just amazing to me.
Because you were working, like, you're from New York. I live in New York now. So shout out to anyone that was born and raised. Do you miss New York?
Oh, I miss New York. I'm going.
You are going?
Yes. I still have wonderful friends there. My brother lives in the area. And, you know, I haven't seen any of these people now in over a year. And I was getting used to seeing them more regularly, so I'm looking forward to that.
I'm coming to LA probably. I mean, I've been away three times already, you know. I mean, I feel like, I don't know if you've flown at all. I haven't felt unsafe, I'll be honest.
Well, I'm vaccinated now, so.
Well,
it's only other people that I pose a threat to.
Right. Well, I mean, like, so you're from New York and you were working, you know, as an actress before this. So how did this iconic, infamous role, like, when did you first hear about 90210? Like, how did this come to you?
Well, you know, I had come to LA with a show called Today's FBI, starring Mike Connors, and we had a great season, and then it was canceled, and I felt like a beached whale in LA. I said, what am I doing here? I got depressed. I went back to church. I went into therapy. I mean, I did everything right. My life is not turning out the way I thought it would. And well, there was a lot of stuff that happened. And it was another period in my life where I thought, oh my God, I'm never going to work again. It's over for me. I was a single mom at the time. And I was just like in despair. I mean, truly. And every time, you know, they called me for this audition. I went in and I read. And then I didn't hear anything for two or three days. And I would just bawling my eyes out about, this is it. My career is over. How am I going to support my family? And because I hadn't really caught a lot of traction. I'd had that good year when my son was born that I had a few guest spots, but I hadn't caught a lot of traction. And so this happened. I don't know. There were two or three auditions. And when I got the job, I was thrilled. You know, at first it was just the pilot. And I mean, I had no idea whether it was going to be successful or not. I don't have an eye for those things. And I was dating a guy at the time. And when they picked up the series, my first thought was, well, now we can get married, because with neither of us having a job, it didn't seem like he was also an actor at the time. So, you know, it was just one thing after another. I mean, I think the amazing part started happening during the filming of the show. And I think it was, we did a season. I can't remember. They decided at one point that they were going to show, they figured out that it was for teens, and they decided they're going to start shows in the summer. So instead of doing 22 episodes, we did 30 episodes, which is a lot. And then there was this incident with Luke having to be smuggled out of an event in a laundry basket because of how many people showed up. And that's when it started to go, oh, this is a thing, you know? I liked the stories. I liked that, you know, we were dealing with issues. You know, I think Chuck Rosen would say it was the first show to take teenagers seriously, maybe for in a long time at least. And it was the precursor of a lot of shows that focused on teenagers, right? But I don't think we had any idea that we were in this, the forefront of a movement, so to speak.
You didn't.
No, and it wasn't until these events started happening that people, that just exploded, that people were going, oh my God. And I had, my niece was 14 at the time, and she got all her friends to watch because I was on it, you know. And it was their favorite show, and they couldn't believe they'd never even heard of it. And they were only watching it because I was on it, you know, her aunt.
And they couldn't believe how good it was.
Yeah. And so I think it was the second season that they went for this 30 episodes, and they started in the summer because that's when kids are home. They're out of school, right?
Yeah. I talked to so many people on this show that when I run into someone or have them back on the show and they remember my name, I'm always blown away. It's the little details. And when it comes to sheets, the only place I turn is Bowl and Branch. Why? Because they pay attention to the little details. Bowl and Branch was formed by a husband and wife team that set out to give sleepers more choices for high quality sheets at a fair price. And boy, did they ever accomplish that. What I love is the variety of colors. I chose the pewter mainly because it goes best with my apartment. The sheets are so elegant. They look and feel so sophisticated, but the price is so reasonable. That's why I chose them. They're 100% organic cotton. They are made toxin-free. And what I love is they get softer with every wash. Sheets that look high-end, sophisticated, and elegant, but are affordable, sign me up. And that is why I did sign up. These are the only sheets I will now use. And you guys need to check this out. So listen, you can try them worry-free for 30 nights with free shipping and returns. To experience the best sheets you've ever felt, choose Bowl and Branch. And because you're listening to this podcast, you get an exclusive 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code VELVET at bowlandbranch.com. That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L and B-R-A-N-C-H.com, promo code VELVET. I think it was, so right, the first season aired and the ratings weren't good. So here you go. The ratings weren't good. And then, you know, back then, right, it was CBS, Fox. Fox was the new thing. We had none of this streaming and they, right, that it was the
fourth network.
Yeah. And they decided to do episodes in the summer that first year. And that's when you guys came back and the ratings for the second season were like through the roof.
Yes. And it's when, you know, because the teenagers really caught on to it. That sort of shifted the whole focus of the show.
It did. When you, before you got 90210, when you were not getting traction, were you ever close to getting something that now it's like, oh, that's Pretty Woman, that's Julie Roberts? Like, were you ever close to something that is now like so iconic where you're like, okay, just thought I'd ask.
No. Everybody has those stories but me. And actually, I have to say, you know, and Meryl Streep, she and I are about the same age, but when she came into town, she'd been at Yale Drama School, and she sort of came in the tier above me. I was reading for her understudy. So that's where, but I love the theater, and I had a great time in New York. And I don't, you know, the way your life goes, you think you're in charge, but you're not. And we're such creatures of opportunity and circumstance. And so I can't regret that I left New York, but I love New York.
And you can't tell, like, when you auditioned for 90210, like, you couldn't tell, like, you got the part, you just, you know, you just, you couldn't tell. It wasn't like, this was the best audition of my life.
Yeah, no, the final audition, I knew it was between me and somebody else. It was down to two of us, and God only knows why they went with me. Maybe it's because I think she maybe was blonde, and Shannon is dark-haired, so it may have been that I look a little bit more like Shannon. I mean, I don't think I look particularly like Shannon, but we don't look dissimilar anyway. So who knows? I mean, these things, you have to learn as an actor that there's a way in which it's not about you. It's about what's in their minds and what they're looking for. And if you match up with something, sure. And there's also, you know, I know that casting people are sometimes bowled over when somebody walks in the room who's, you know, hits it out of the park in terms of they've just got that thing, whatever that thing is.
And yeah,
that's not something you can manufacture, you know.
So are we saying that you owe Shannon your job on 90210 just because you looked a little?
No, I could very well be. I'd say I owe it to Aaron Spelling, but because he was a lovely man.
Well, to that point, I mean, even though you say you couldn't tell, like, was there buzz about this? Like, at least when you went and auditioned, I mean, this was Love Boat. This was Fantasy Island, Charlie's Angels. Like, this was Aaron Spelling. Like, were you at least like, oh my God?
It was Aaron Spelling. But, you know, I don't know if there wasn't buzz or just I wasn't plugged into the buzz. I was kind of in my own world. I mean, I really dig deep into my personal life. And when I'm there, I'm not one of those people who's really got a sense for what's going on in the industry. I'm a Johnny come lately as far as the industry goes. I was much more clued in about theater in New York when I was there. But that's not, it just, I don't, that doesn't, that's, you know, and I know that smart actors these days, they do know what's going on. They know who works where. They're producers as well as actors. And I was never a producer. I'm never going to be a producer. No.
You were just like, let me do a great job.
Let me do my thing. I don't want to be in charge.
Right. So you were just happy
I mean, no directing, no producing.
You were just happy to have the job. It wasn't like, oh God, this is the one that's going to change my life.
No. I was delighted to have a job. I was thrilled to have a job.
And
a lovely character to play.
Yeah, it was a lovely character.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't, like, that first season, like, when you were filming it before it was out in the beach club and when it came back and the ratings went through, like, you couldn't really tell, like, this might change the TV landscape forever.
Oh, no. No idea. Yeah, I mean, even how much it would change my own life, right? None.
Yeah.
And actually, I'd have to say that aside from the years that I actually worked on the show, the biggest change to my life has been much more recent because of this kind of resurgence of the show. You know, the last two or three years, there are so many, there's podcasts, there's, you know, all kinds of stuff going on about the show and about other shows too. You know, it's not just us, but this treasuring of, I think, of an experience that people had when they watched the show and connected with the characters. It's that's become huge in the last several years. And so there's a way in which there's more change in my life now because of it. Yeah.
This podcast, right. It is a trend, like the OC, there's two people from the OC that just now have a podcast, but like Tori and Jenny, like you've been on their podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How is
and
that?
I've been on the 90210 podcast and, you know, there's a bunch of things happening, you know, and I think, you know, actually, I have a friend who's doing a little podcast on Sweet Valley High, which I think was a series of books. They never turned it into a TV show.
Yeah.
But I think it's a similar thing. People, this longing for, I think it's the longing to redo our high school experience. Let's face it. Who knows what the fuck they're doing in high school? Can I say that on this?
Oh, yeah. You can say anything you want. Yeah. Well, even if you do know what the fuck you're doing, who had a great high school experience? I mean, maybe some people did. I would not be one of them. So I'm not going to raise my hand for that.
No. I mean, I wouldn't say I had a terrible experience, but it was just confusing. And college was even more confusing because it was the sexual revolution and the Vietnam War. It was insane when I was in college. So it's probably taken me 20 years to recover.
And now you're getting this whole resurgence of fanfare.
Yeah, so it's lovely. It's lovely. It's like the cream in my coffee. It's icing on my cake.
It's literally the gift that keeps giving.
It literally is. I mean, this book I wrote would not have happened without 90210, I don't think.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check out betterhelp.com/velvetrope. Listen, life is full of stress. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are. Life is stressful. You may not be feeling down and out and depressed or like you're at a total loss, but if your stress level is high, like mine, your temper is shorter than usual, like mine, or even if you're starting to feel strain in any of your relationships, you could probably use the chance to unload the stress and get it out. Talk to someone who's completely unbiased and who's not going to judge you or take sides. If there's stuff you can't tell your friends or family, this is the place to do it. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Unload the stressors and get some unbiased feedback. You'd be pretty surprised at what you might gain for it. Try it out. See if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Behind the Velvet Rope listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/velvetrope. That's BETTERHELP.com/velvetrope. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope. I want to talk about that book, but before we get there, because I do have a lot to say about the book and your transition to this career. So let's just talk about, there's no secret. There was an unauthorized movie made about it. Like, we all know about all the talking about what happened on set. So let's just stay there for a minute. Just humor me, because I'm so excited to ask you some of these questions. So, I mean, first of all, I want to talk about, did you see that unauthorized movie? Because there was a lot in it.
Tell me, I'll have to look for it. Where do I, I stream it?
I'll have to send it to you. It was like a few years ago.
Okay.
I mean, I know. I mean, they did one for Saved by the Bell. Well, I mean, so we have, you didn't meet anyone until you were on set, right? Like, you didn't audition with anyone or anything like that.
I auditioned with, I did read with Shannon, with Aaron Spelling. That was, I think, my last audition. And then we recast the husband, right? So I read with James and the other fellow who was reading for that part. And I saw the two guys reading. I saw Luke and the other fellow reading for Luke's part at some point. And I looked at Luke and the other guy. They were so different physically. I said, oh, yeah, that's the one.
What was the other one like?
He was smaller. He was shorter and more built out. He was, Luke was kind of tall and slim, and this guy was a little bit shorter and kind of hunkier, more muscly, that kind of guy. Totally different type. I thought that was really interesting.
And you just looked at Luke, tall and slender, and you said, that's who's getting the part?
Yeah, I looked at him and said, oh, yeah, he's the one.
See?
I was right.
Maybe you do have this whole side career in casting. If you're not a producer, maybe you would.
I don't know. You know, everybody says people think once you're in the industry, it's so easy to slip into another thing. Oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you? Well, it's each thing is its own learning curve.
Yeah.
Its own, how do I get, I mean, I am not on the inside enough that I can just switch roles that easily. And it's not my thing anyway.
You like acting.
I like people. I like human dynamics. So I'm interested in acting, in psychotherapy, and I'm interested in spirituality, which is all about being human. So all those three things working together is sort of what I've always been interested in and kind of moving from one to the next.
Well, that's why you became a licensed therapist.
That's right, yes. Well, I mean, you know, studied psychology in college.
I like people too. I mean, that's part of what I love about my job is that just really get to know someone. And like, I'm definitely one of those who's always on my phone and I'm like, I hear it. But like when you do a show like this, you know, you are focused and you're like, then I remember it forever. Like I could tell you what everyone has said on every show I've ever done just because you're focused. Well, maybe not everything, but like the majority of it.
Yeah.
So how was it like, let's just start with Tori for a minute. You know, we all know the story, like Tori, you know, auditioned under a fake name. And I mean, who doesn't know that story? I mean, I don't know.
I only heard it a couple years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Well, Tori Mitchell, I don't know how that's so fake or so misleading and how the people in the room don't know you, like you're Aaron Spelling's daughter, but.
Well, and certainly by the time Aaron sees the tape.
Yeah.
He knows.
But
that was probably smart on her part. She's very savvy, as I've come to understand.
She's her father. You think she's her father's daughter?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's already produced how many shows? I mean, you know, reality shows and sitcoms with Jenny. I mean, she's like a producing juggernaut in some ways.
She is. Was there ever, you know, because this is where my mind goes, like, how do you have conflict with the boss's daughter? Like, I know Tori wasn't one to cause trouble on set, but like, was there ever that like nepotism and like, we can't go against her?
No. I certainly never felt it. But of course, I wasn't in a position of making decisions. I was just there, you know, serving the role. But I was just impressed, you know, and I worked with Randy on Sunset Beach, which was really sort of interesting. But I was kind of impressed with both of them. They seemed to have their feet on the ground and they knew what they were about. And, you know, the way she has been able to take this success and generate more for herself, I think supports that view. I thought both of them were very down to earth, actually. And she's very savvy. And I thought all the young ladies had a fashion sense that was really fabulous. Not I've ever had, but.
What about, did you kind of stay out of all the drama? You know, I mean, because you
The
mom.
I mean, I used to hear from the wardrobe people say, because I don't know, there was issues of who was going to wear which dress and I kind of understand it. They were very young. You know, one of the great things about doing the reboot a couple summers ago was to get to see them again. And they're all now older than I was when I was doing the show. And they've all grown up. So I think we can write off a lot of that craziness that happened to very young people being thrown into the spotlight, a lot of pressure on them. And how does that pressure get expressed? It gets expressed in, I've got to be better than her because if she's my competition, I mean, and seeing one another that way. I mean, I think also that's kind of the way women are trained. We're trained to see each other as competition, whereas men are more likely. Yeah, they're just as likely to put somebody down so they can see they're into competition, but it's more of a bro competition. You know, it's probably a little more overt. perhaps.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if there was a lot of competition among the guys, but, you know, they were like, hey, they were the BMOCs all of a sudden, whereas the girls were like, holy shit, somebody came to my house. That's scary for a woman, you know? And this sense of being famous, that means people are coming after you. It's terrifying for an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old young woman who's, you know, sort of barely feeling like a woman.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Right. And there is that pressure, like, this is your big break. If you don't do the right thing, your career could be over.
And that's also part of the teen angst. This is, you know, this is going to ruin my entire life if this doesn't go well. That's just not true, you know.
Right.
But I think it served. I think they all made, I think they all did well with it overall, in terms of dealing with all of those pressures and looking good on the show.
Do you think all the reports of, yes, we've all, this is many years later, we've all come out of it, but at, you know, do you think all those reports of, like, you know, Shannon, like, she was the original bad girl on set, like, was there ever anything you read where you're like, okay, well, let me say, this never happened, people, come on.
Well, they talked a lot about stuff that I had no idea about. I didn't read the stories about the show that much. I was doing my own publicity. I was a little more interested in that. But I do think that, you know, the press likes to highlight conflict.
Especially between women.
And so, you know, competition and stuff like that. And especially young women, you know, young women become sex symbols for men who are old enough to be their grandfathers, right? Because of the bizarre bias of our culture. And anything titillating that they can come up with, I mean, and I think it's exploitation. It's exploitation of the young people who are in our business and really need to be protected from some of that until they're really, you know, old enough to deal with it.
Right. So you weren't around like when, these are things that are admitted, like when Shannon and Jenny got in the physical fight.
Oh God, no, I was never, no, you know, it's interesting because after the first season, it sort of shifted from being a family show to the kids show. So that means, I mean, I didn't even see most of the other kids unless they were congregating at the Walsh House, right? Which they did periodically. And that was always a lot of fun. But, you know, they're at the Walsh House, so they're not going to break into a fight at the Walsh House. They probably had the fight at school, and I was never at school. So, you know, I didn't see a lot of this stuff. I wasn't there for it. Sometimes I hear about it, as I say, from makeup and hair or the costume department were my sources of information. All I just remember a big argument about a dress.
The infamous red dress, yes.
The infamous red dress. But, you know, they did do this storyline where they both showed up at the prom in the same dress. And I wonder if they picked that from the things that happened in their competition over the dress thing.
They might have. But yeah, like I would imagine, like if there was a physical fight, the makeup and hair people would say, like, hey, I mean, that's just like, you know.
Yeah. No. So, wow, I never heard about the physical fight. You see, you're enlightening me.
And what you really just keep to your, like, I mean, that's good. Like, you're just into your
I know.
Heart.
I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm just a little bit too much of a, you know, into my own thing on the set. It's different in a play. In a play, you're there all the time, you know, and I would hang out on set sometimes, but, you know, I wasn't trying to learn how to be a director or a producer. And so usually I would say, oh, well, you know, I had a kid, I had a husband, I had other things I was doing. I did lots of PR and, you know, so, I would sit in my dressing room and do the things that I wanted to do or needed to do.
And, right.
And the rest of it just went over my head.
That's good. So it's not like you woke up and you're like, my stomach is so tense. I don't want to go to work today.
Oh God, no. Oh no, 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 no. And I mean, you know, I was doing what I needed to do. What other people did was their business.
Did you see like a decrease then? Cause I'm trying to think back, like from that first season was more of like the family show when we moved from Minnesota and then right after the summer. So like, yeah. Was your role supposed to be bigger or it was kind of the same? Cause you guys were having
Well, the difference part. Was they weren't, they, we really didn't have any storylines that centered the parents.
Right.
Anymore. So we were sort of adjunctive. I mean, you know, it's hard for me to remember. They did finally do something. You know, at one point, it was like we'd have be in the family, right? And my job would be, I turned into a waitress of my own family, right? I'm bringing the coffee pot to pour the coffee for a dolly shot to bring us into the scene. And then I don't say anything during the scene. And I sort of complained about it. I said, you know, I'm the mother. I should have a point of view. And one of the writers, we had lunch sometime after this. And she said, you know, I realized that we didn't have that much for the parents to do. So we just put it in Jim's mouth. And I felt particularly bad about that because I knew that a lot of kids were looking at this show and they're looking at what moms do and moms. I mean, in the home is the one place where women really engage, right? And yeah. So it seemed particularly onerous. But then they did a very clever thing. They sent me back to school. So I would run into the kids because I went to the same university, right? California University. So right. I would have little interactions with the kids there and add whatever plot twist or subtle shift that was important for the storyline, right? And right. So that gave me a little different venue to work in. And then James and I would still have, I mean, I worked with James probably more than anybody else.
Right. Like, I mean, James and then Shannon and Jason probably second.
Yeah. Well, Shannon second, definitely. But, you know, even though I had scenes with the group, I never had a one-on-one scene with my son until I came back as a guest star in season 7. Now,
really?
I find that bizarre.
I find that bizarre. Yeah, I find that really bizarre.
You want to know what my theory is? I have not checked this out with any of the writers.
So tell me.
My own theory. I mean, most of the writers were, a lot of the writers were men. And I think, you know, Jason was number one on the call sheet. He was the guy, he was the organizer. He was the center around which this group formed. And I think, A, they didn't want to deal with their own issues with their own mothers when they were teenage boys. And B, they didn't want to put their lead guy into authority under the authority of a woman. Now, it could be that sort of thing was operating at a very sort of subconscious level, and then I'm sure they weren't thinking that way.
Wait, so let me follow. So I'm just so there's no scene.
Psychologist talking.
But this is the stuff like I love this stuff too. So wait, so like you didn't have a scene with Jason alone until season seven.
Season seven, when I come home and Jim and I are on the outs and maybe going to get divorced. And he and I had a beautiful, lovely, long scene together. And that was the first time we'd had a one-on-one scene.
And then what? So that I got. And then I didn't understand where you were going with the second part of this. But it sounded interesting.
That the writers didn't want to engage with a teenage boy and his mother because it triggers their own experiences as teenage boys with their mothers. And there's an authority conflict. We live in a patriarchal culture. So young men want to be in charge, especially as teenagers when they're trying to prove themselves so hard. But in the home, the mother has more authority than the teenage boy. Excuse me very much, right?
Yeah.
And that was uncomfortable for them. Both to put Jason in that position and to relive it themselves. That's what I think was going on. But, you know,
interesting.
Making it up. I mean, I don't know any of these guys well enough to say from their own experience what that would have been like. I just know that for teenage boys and their moms, that's a little bit of a dissonance.
That's an interesting. Right, because you had scenes with James, and I mean, you had scenes along with Shannon.
I had tons of scenes. There was tons of mother-daughter storylines, because that's kind of classic teen, right?
Yeah.
And there were father-daughter storylines and father-son storylines, and no mother-son storylines.
Interesting.
Isn't that?
That is interesting. I mean, I don't, you know, I've watched them all. I just can't, I'm bad about picking up on stuff like that. Well, what about, you know, all these rumors that like Shannon was just grossly late all the time. So you had your head down and you were doing your part, but now there's a scene alone between Carol and Shannon.
Okay. I have to confess. I there was one time that I remember where, and you know, there are times when she might've shown up late, but they whipped her through hair and makeup and got her ready, and you know, there's all sorts of things that delay. So you're not always sure what the delay is actually from. But right. There was one time where we shot all the coverage in the scene first because Shannon was getting ready. And so we couldn't do the, normally you start with the cover shot, right? And what the main shot where you know, you have all the action in one shot. Normally you start there and then do your coverage, but we did the coverage first because she wasn't there.
And that like didn't bother you? Like you weren't the...
It didn't bother me. I'm sure it bothered the producers and the director. And I have to say, it didn't seem... I mean, it seemed like not the best way to move forward. With your, it's not a smart move for an actor to show up late.
No. So like as the mother, you know, like did that spill over to just the whole cast? Like, oh, I want to pull Brian aside and, you know, tell him like,
no. Oh God, no. Oh God, no. No, 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 no.
You could see why someone would think, you know.
I know better than to try and tell people how they should live their lives. And you know, these kids had as much, or most of them had more experience in, certainly in this area of the business, you know, television and film than I did. I mean, Jason, Shannon, she'd been acting since she was, I don't know, seven?
Yeah.
Jason had been acting since he was four on television. So, I mean, I was really kind of a newbie from that point of view. I mean, I'd been in town for several years, I'd been in town for, gosh, I guess 9 years by that point. And I had done some television. I had done a series, you know, this other TV series. We did a whole season. And then I did various guest spots and movies of the week and things like that. So I'd done a lot of stuff. But, I mean, I hadn't been on something like Little House on the Prairie.
Right. That's one of the most iconic TV shows ever.
Iconic TV shows built on one of the most iconic book series for, especially for girls ever written.
Were so, you, sh- were you shocked when, like, you know, like you said, like Luke was being snuck out, you know, Jason, like just the, like, you know, from the children's point of, the kids' point of view, were you shocked at just how, like, they couldn't go to a mall, the girls would chase them, you know, you heard all these stories.
Yeah, I was, you know, as far as having to deal with all that stuff, I was not envious. This is a major obstacle to, you know, just living your life, having to be, yeah, being mobbed everywhere you go. But you know, the one time, and you know, I was happy for them to have all of the publicity and stuff that they wanted and everything like that. The one thing that really hit me hard though was Life magazine did an article on the show, and they took a picture of the cast and they did not include the parents. And that hurt, because that was Life magazine. I mean, I don't care about 16 or, you know, American Teen or whatever, but Life magazine, I grew up with Life magazine. I remember reading about Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird, and that little girl who played Jem snuggled on his lap. Oh my God, I was so jealous of her.
Were you in the picture, like when it was sent or taken, and then they just edited you out, or there was
we were not invited to have to be part of the picture. And, you know, this is after, oh, Life magazine is coming to the set, they're going to take a picture of the cast, and you're going, oh yeah, that's cool. And you show up at, you know, we were filming, so we didn't have to show up at an extra time, but then the time comes for the picture. Oh, no, not you two, not the parents, just the kids. So it was like it was not clear at the beginning. And so it really was like a little stab in the heart.
And when they tell you this, is it like you and James are about to walk on to where the picture is being taken and they're like, please back up?
Well, no, they were gathering people together to go. And he said, no, it's, yeah, that's when we found out, oh, not the parents. We're not part of the cast. Yeah, so, but, you know.
So that was.
Complain. You know, it's one of those things. They're paying me all this money. I'm getting to live a beautiful life, and I have my own publicity and stuff. So it's like.
So it really was just the Life magazine was the one thing that kind of
really hit hard.
What about, right, and you weren't upset when they were getting mobbed like that? You were almost,
oh God,
and,
no.
And that never came to you? Like, you know, people saying, okay, you know, they talk to you for 3 minutes and they say, tell me about Jason, tell me about Shannon.
Was a little bit of that. You know, I had, you meet somebody from the media and you think, oh, they're being really friendly. And then they start calling you and says, no, you got any dirt on the set? I never really had any dirt on the set. And second of all, I wouldn't have shared it with the media anyway. I mean,
Right. I'm going to move on after this question. But so you did have these scenes with Shannon. Like, was she ever mean to you?
No. No, she was always a complete professional with me. I wouldn't say we were close, because she was very independent, and you know, she had her own idea about things. She was very outspoken about things, but we had a very good working relationship. So yeah, I didn't have any problems with Shannon at all.
That's good. And that's good that you just kind of stayed out of the fray.
I stayed out of the fray.
Well, no, because like you're saying, like you're appreciative, you took the job. You know, like I could see if you were doing a scene and she was like, did have her opinions and she said, wait, stop, let's do it this way, let's do it that way. And you're just like, I'm just the actress and I just want to play the scene and let's go home. I could see that being annoying.
I never had that kind of issue with her. I mean, you know, sometimes she was insistent in her coverage that she, you know, she wanted another take. But, I respect that. Sometimes actors, you know, you can be too passive as an actor. You have to have a sense. And sometimes people who get a reputation for being difficult, it's just because they're insistent that they, you know, they want to do their best work.
Right.
You know, what did I hear about De Niro once? Made them do 60 takes of him walking down a street and going in a door. Excuse me, that's ridiculous. But, he, you know, he's given carte blanche because, of course, he's Robert De Niro. But at the same time, you know, but a younger, less well-known actor who may have that same potential gets labeled if they do stuff like that. So it's a balancing act. You have to be assertive enough to make sure you're giving, you're getting what you need and you're giving what's required, right? And more than what's required, right? And recognize that you're only one part of a huge machine and you have your role to play and you have to respect other people who are involved. One of my favorite stories is, you know, there was a period where you'd show up on the set, right, and all of the kids would sort of slowly wander in, you know, and the directors would be tearing their hair out. Well, the first time, you know, Jason directed one of the episodes. The very next episode he was in, he was the first one on set when called. He was, you know, Mr. Show up, be there, because he suddenly saw from the other side of the camera what it cost when people aren't prompt and come when they're called, you know. It was like, wow, somebody figured something out there.
That's an interesting point. Do you think, because, you know, now we're in social media and back then it wasn't, it was different, but we had like the print magazines. Like, do you think this whole thing with Shannon, I mean, the bad girl and all this, like, do you think it would have been a thing if she were a man? Like if this were Luke or
Jason? I think it would have been approached very differently. I mean, in the same way that for the guys, you know, having all of this fame and having women throwing themselves at them was that all stoked their ego. I think that, you know, women who behave in those ways are still called sluts and men are not. There is totally a double standard. And I do think that it's, you know, that they use that bad girl thing as much as a titillation factor. You know, and I don't know Shannon well, so I don't know if some of that was maybe just deliberate, because as they say, no publicity is bad publicity. Publicity is publicity. People know who you are. And, you know, so I wouldn't even know how to begin to have an opinion on that. But I do think that we are very patriarchal culture still. And that really influences the kinds of pressures that are put on, especially young women. You know, by the time, you know, women are my age, nobody pays any attention to them anymore. So that's another reason why this is so fun. Normally I'd be fading into oblivion, but because of 90210, suddenly people are interested in me. It's like, it's quite lovely.
Well, I would have wanted to talk to you 5 years ago, 10 years ago, if I was doing this at the time.
Well, yes, right.
It never went away for me. I didn't even really realize that it was such a big resurgence now. Cause like for me, it's always just, you know, you have your shows that you're always like, this is on brand for the podcast. This is on brand for my personal life. Like just this is a self-indulgent show. I am happy to do it regardless. But no, I mean, that's a good point. And you never, I guess you kind of already answered this. You never wanted to like take someone like Shannon, not as a mother, just as like an actress to actress. Like, you know, you were appreciative. Like, I'm making a lot of money. Like,
thanks for tuning into part one of our sit down with Miss Carol Potter. And stay tuned for part two. You know, I haven't asked all my Shannon and Tori questions. I just can't help myself. We talk about when Cindy and Jim Walsh went to Hong Kong on business and were never heard from again. They moved to Hong Kong, the exit of Carol Potter from 90210. We talked to Carol about that, life after 90210, BH 90210, the reboot, which we all saw a year or two ago. Will there ever be another reboot movie reunion? Carol's life now as a therapist, her new book. We have so much more to talk about. Current projects, True Tory, Shannon, remember Scare Tactics with Shannon Doherty? We talk about it. And we talk about the passing of Luke Perry and just the 90210 legacy. There's so much more. We are just scratching the surface. Hope you enjoyed this. Stay tuned for our second part of a chat with Miss Carol Potter coming soon.
Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review, because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind the Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind the Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.